Chapter 9. "Well, hello to you too," I muttered. My father's face looked down at me from the giant monitor screen. There were fewer lines around his eyes and mouth, and there was less of the gray that had streaked his curly black hair. But the man that stared at me was unmistakably the man I now knew was my father. He even had the heavy bags under his eyes that I knew meant that he hadn't slept in weeks. A small smile tugged at my lips as I remembered the times that I had seen the haggard expression. I'd come to associate it with one of Saul's crazy experiments, since the bastard would get stuck on a project and forget that sleep was a necessary function. He'd keep going like the damned Energizer Bunny until the paranoid genius couldn't stay away anymore. And I'd find him passed out over his workbench with a soldering iron in his hand or a motherboard in front of him.
"Saul,"
Phyla said from beside me. Her tail swished back and forth, and the tip curled in on itself a few times. She had a big smile on her face as she looked up at this dimension's version of my father. The last world Saul had kept her company when the rest of us had to go into Detroit. And the two of them had gotten along so well that I knew she would be excited to meet all the other iterations that we'd come across.
"He looks exhausted,"
Emma said in her elegant accent. "That's what he looks like when he's stuck on a project," I said. "He probably hadn't eaten in days when he filmed this." I glanced down at the keyboard to see what I could have touched to activate the recording. But the only things that I'd pressed were the escape and the little black square that acted as a mouse. The pad had probably been what did it, but I still turned my attention to the rest of the room, just in case there was a motion detector or something.
"All right," Saul said. "I assume, since you're watching this video, that you're another dimension's version of me. Unless one of those pedophile lizard fucks managed to get my DNA."
His face turned a deep red as he glared down at me, and then he burst into a round of coughs. The tissue that he pulled out and dapped onto his lips was covered in rust-colored dots. He sighed, rolled his eyes at the blood he'd coughed up, and then threw the used napkin past the camera.
"Close, but not quite," I responded.
"Jesus fucking Christ," he groaned. "I'm a video, I can't hear you, you don't have to respond. Gotcha."
"Oh, not this shit again," I facepalmed.
"Either way, I guess you're gonna have to do what I can't,"
the younger Saul said.
"We're going to save the human race from spending an eternity in a sardine can in space."
"Do you really think that he has a way to save this planet?"
Emma had a hopeful light in her sky blue eyes. "I don't know when this was recorded," I said. "He may have expected someone to come earlier than we did." A loud bang came from below, followed by a low rumble that shook the building. And I reached down to tap the mouse pad. I waited a few seconds to make sure that the video was paused, and then walked out onto the walkway to see what had happened. One of the large drones was sprawled in front of the warehouse doors like the thing had fallen. It tried to lift up a few times, but it couldn't seem to get itself off of the ground. The cords attached to its underside swept across the ground like it was trying to find something to push itself up on. Another bot collided into the drone, and they both lay in a heap while the smaller flying robot started to dip low. The machines fought for a few minutes before they managed to get back up, and then the world began to shake with a small earthquake.
"The world is going to fall apart soon,"
Acrasis said as we watched the drones.
"I can feel it in the ground."
"Do you think it'll last until tomorrow afternoon?" I asked. My heart jumped into overdrive as I waited for her response. I couldn't make the dimensional engine patent-pending jump any earlier than 3 p.m., and the base may not stay together if the whole Earth blew up. Questions tumbled over themselves in my mind, and I doubted that the Saul from this dimension was alive to give me answers if he'd left a video for us.
"I believe that it should be okay,"
the alien woman said as she tilted her head in thought.
"This world will not last another month, at least if it follows the same trajectory that my planet did."
"Well," I ran a hand through my hair, "I guess as long as we're not around, then it'll be fine. The space station shouldn't have any problems since it's in orbit. Earthquakes can't bother anyone if you're not touching the ground."
"But it would not be able to escape the debris if the Earth comes apart,"
Acrasis said as her emerald eyes turned toward the sky above us.
"The space station left the Earth's orbital system 1 year ago,"
Abby said in answer to my unasked question. "Good," I said.
so at least humans will survive for a little while longer.
Should we still find out what Saul wanted us to do?
Fila asked as she sauntered out of the control room. We can at least hear him out, I said. Besides, he might have a way for us to stop that damn machine so we can get the shipping container. I looked down at the gilding PM. It had continued to select metals and woods during the earthquake, and it had started to assemble something that looked like a TV. The new appliance was built with rapid efficiency, and soon a small drone had picked up the device and carried it away while the production machine moved on to the next object.
At least there aren't any more of those disgusting cockroaches,
Emma said with a shiver. I'm sure they're around here somewhere, I said, and turned back to the control room. Saul's face was still paused on the large flat-screen monitor, and I stared at the man that I'd always thought was my uncle. I knew that my world, Saul, had been killed before he could tell me that he was actually my father. But I wished that I'd been able to spend time with him as my dad. The thought that I'd had a father and not just a sperm donor that had abandoned me was still hard for me to get used to. I wasn't sure what this Saul wanted from me, but I owed it to my Saul to at least hear the guy out. The man's paused face was thinner than I'd ever seen, and when I looked closer, I could see the blood vessels on his forehead had spread out like a thin, spidery web. I was sure that he hadn't lived much longer than the video, and I wanted to know what had happened to take the genius down.
All right, asshole, Saul said when I'd clicked the unpause button. Like I said, if you manage to start this video, then you've either snagged some of my DNA, or you've come from another dimension with something else awesome I probably made since I'm fucking awesome.
He stopped as another round of coughs interrupted him, and when he finished, he had to wipe the blood from his mouth again. A string of breathy curse words were muttered under his breath, and then he tossed the napkin toward the camera like he had with the last one. Oh, damn, I muttered. He looks terrible. What the hell happened to him?
I bet you're wondering what the fuck happened to me, the dark-haired man said.
How did he know what I was thinking?
Fila gasped as she put her hands on her shapely hips. He's really good at figuring that kind of stuff out, I said. I thought of the last video that my Saul had left me. It had explained that he was my biological father and the bare minimum about the dimensional engine patent pending. He had warned me not to mess with the engine itself, and that I should bring it to any Saul that I found just in case they knew more about how to fix it than he did.
Well, I figured out how to make the dimensional engine patent pending work, but something went wrong, the computer screen, Saul said. I made it to one world and back, but the engine cracked. I sent it back to the dimension that I'd gone to, so it won't be able to hurt anyone else here.
Won't that hurt the people in that other world?
Emma asked with a frown.
Don't get your panties in a wad, Saul said as he rolled his eyes. That world was already dead. It was practically on fire, which is why the fucking engine cracked in the first damn place. I didn't account for worlds that were post-apocalyptic when I set the parameters. Damn rookie mistake.
At least you made it back alive, I said. Fila wandered off into the corner of the room. Her tail was completely straight and her ears twitched as she listened to something. The room was quiet as she bent to look at whatever had caught her attention. She wiggled her butt for a second and then pounced on a pile of crinkled papers before she triumphantly held up a cockroach as long as my forearm. Another round of coughs from the monitor brought my attention back to Saul. He looked even paler than he had when the video started, and the purple bruising around his eyes was so dark that it looked like he'd lost a fight. The screen was flecked with blood since he hadn't bothered with a napkin this time, but he did wipe the red liquid from his lips with his sleeve.
I don't have much time left, the tired man said. When the engine cracked, it leaked out some of the promethium. I didn't come in contact with much of it before I sent the fucking thing packing, but it was enough.
My heart squeezed in my chest as I realized that I would lose another Saul, even if I hadn't actually met the man, and tears pricked at the corners of my eyes. I'd been able to say goodbye to the last world's version of my father, but this video was too close to the one that mine had left me, and grief slammed into me like a battering ram. The desk held me up as I forced myself to take deep breaths, shook my head, and almost heard my Saul's voice in the back of my head as he told me to get my shit together.
I bet it's fucking blowing your mind to see me right now.
Saul shook his head and gave me that familiar lopsided smile,
But I knew that since I'd made it to an alternative universe that it was possible for the others to exist, and there would be one where I wasn't such a dumbass.
He devolved into another fit of coughing, and didn't stop until the vein in his forehead was so pronounced that I thought it might burst. The bright blue line still stood out against his pale skin when he finally managed to get himself together. He grabbed at the sweat on his face, licked his lips, and then cleared his throat.
As long as you're not one of those fucking pedophile lizard people, you're gonna be up to help me, because there's no dimension where I'd let the entire human race live in a sardine can in space, my father ranted. So I have a plan. It can only be activated by my DNA. That way I know I can trust it won't get fucked up.
Paranoid bastard, I muttered to myself as I shook my head.
I would have done it myself, but the damn promethium poisoning is killing me too fast, the dying man said. I had to do some fancy hacking just to get this video to the control center. Luckily for me, the Gilding Company is run by a bunch of evolutionary rejects who couldn't tie their damn shoes together, much less make a decent security system.
Well, they did make a machine they couldn't turn off, I said.
Oh, I'm sure they thought that they could when they made it,
Emma said, though her tone didn't sound convinced by her own argument.
You'll have to be careful of the machine, Sol said. It used drones before when some dumbasses with shotguns and too much beer in their bellies decided that they'd attack the damn thing. Like they didn't realize it was a bad idea when the fucking C-4 the military set off didn't work. I swear those fucking geniuses at the Gilding Company made this machine just so that they could get everyone up on the space station and make a fortune. They built it, the sardine can in space, and they'll be in charge of the entire human race now that everyone is up there. Corporations are the real scourge of the earth. Fuck those guys and their shareholder value. Fuck them in the skull.
I suspected as much, I said with a frown.
How can one company have so much power?
My Victorian-era girlfriend said. She shook her head and crossed her arms over her chest. Her sky-blue eyes narrowed as she turned to look over her shoulder toward the Gilding PM.
They sound like my old pack leader,
Fila growled.
They only care about themselves.
That's how conglomerates work, I said. They do whatever they have to for a buck, and that includes destroying the entire planet.
Doris should be fine, my father said as he ran a hand down his face. I managed to convince her to take a seat on one of the shuttles. I'm not sure if you ever met her, but I can't imagine a universe where Doris and I don't meet at least once. I don't think we can have kids, but hell, with all the possibilities, there's got to be one world where we have a little brat.
There is, I answered, though I knew he couldn't hear me. The man that I knew as my uncle for most of my life stared down at me, and I wished that I'd been able to meet this one and tell him that there was a world where he did have a kid.
Anyways, Sol said as he swiped at a tear that had escaped, I came up with a kill code that'll shut the fucker down, and then Doris and all of the others can come back to the Earth. But then they'll probably have realized it was all a ploy from the Gilding Company, and maybe, just maybe, they'll build a gallows.
I believe this world is too far gone for the humans to return,
Raz said as she sat on the desk.
Even if the drones were to be shut down.
It is, I agreed. But if we want to get anywhere with a shipping container, then we need to take down the Gilding PM. We've been lucky that it's ignored us so far, but I'm pretty sure it won't like it if we start looting its hoard of stuff. And I don't want to fight a bunch of drones if I don't have to. It was an added bonus that it would be Saul's last wish to shut off the machine, though I would have had to do that anyway for my plan to work.
I do not wish to fight those again,
Fila said as her tail swished behind her.
They were a powerful enemy and were difficult to kill.
I assume you decided to help me out if you've made it this far, the dying man said. But that makes sense since you are me, and we are fucking awesome, am I right? Now, what you're gonna do is find a manual override. It's located in the back of the machine. There's a panel that you'll have to unscrew. Don't ask me where you're supposed to find a fucking screwdriver. You were smart enough to get to this world. I think you can figure out how to get a damn panel off. Now, once you're in there, you'll have to enter the kill code. I don't know what kind of bullshit those bastards at the Gilding Company would have programmed into it, so make sure you keep your eyes peeled. Good luck. And thanks again. I'll put up the kill code for 30 seconds before this video will delete itself. Damn it!
I said as I looked around for a piece of paper. The screen went black, and a long list of numbers and letters appeared. A bright red countdown started in the corner, and I swore under my breath as I tried to find something to write with. I found a pen under one of the stacks of paper by a crasis, ran back over to the screen, and jotted down the kill code before it could disappear. The monitor went blank right as I wrote the last letter, and I huffed at Saul's paranoia.
"Did you get it all?"
Emma asked. "Yeah," I replied. "He could have given me a little longer. Probably thought that I could memorize it with one look."
"Oh, I've read about people that can do that,"
the fair-skinned beauty said with a bright smile.
"I wish I had that ability. Could your Saul do that?"
"He could," I said with a nod. "He'd forget to sleep or eat, but he was great at remembering secret messages."
"I wish I could have met him,"
the gentle-voiced woman said.
"But I'm glad that I was able to meet the Last Words version." "I enjoyed that, Saul,"
Fila said with a smile.
"He was kind of floppy, and he taught me more about your world while I waited for you to return. I learned to shoot your gun. The rifle was uncomfortable, and I still prefer my garden weasel to your other weapons."
"He was pretty great," I said. I bit back the wave of sadness and the tears that threatened to spill over. There was a mission that I needed to carry out, whether it was from my Saul or not, and I would do what he asked me to do. I had been given a lot of good years with my father, even if I hadn't known that he was my dad at the time, and I wanted to help him out in whatever dimension that I found him in.
"Shall we get this done, then?"
Emma asked. She brushed her hands over her black bustle skirt and then tucked the loose strands of hair behind her ear. A warm smile spread over her rosebud lips, and her sky-blue eyes were filled with determination as she looked at me. "We should," I said. "We'll need to be careful, though. If the Gilding PM realizes what we're doing, then it's definitely going to attack us."
"I will keep an eye out,"
Fila said as she brandished her garden weasel.
"And if it sends drones, then I will use my slime to stop them,"
Acrasis said.
"I'll knock them over to you,"
the saber-toothed woman said with a saucy smirk.
"And then you finish them off. We are a strong tribe."
"We are," I said with a grin. I took a deep breath, looked at my three beautiful girlfriends, and then led them out of the control room. The piece of paper with the kill code was stuffed into my pocket so that I could grab it when I needed it. I just had to get down the creaky metal staircase without drawing the attention of the killer machine. The drones continued to fly in and out of the giant warehouse as I snuck across the concrete slab. I stared up at the Gilding PM and tried to find a camera. But the orange and yellow machine didn't have any obvious ways to see me. One of the arms brought around a steel beam that almost hit me, but it didn't come back around. So I figured that it was just an accident.
"I don't think it can see us,"
Emma said from my right. "I don't think so either," I said. "But it had to have been able to see the people that it attacked."
"Or it could have used the drones to view their enemies,"
the Victorian-era woman said. "Fila, Acrasis, can you make sure that the flying bots aren't coming towards us?" I asked.
"Yes,"
the saber-toothed woman said.
"Of course,"
Raz said with a snarky smirk that mirrored Fila's. "Great," I responded. "Emma, can you watch the machine? You may need to Westinghouse it."
"Gladly."
The black-haired woman lifted her delicate hands into the air and tiny blue sparks licked at her pale fingers. I nodded my head and then turned my attention to the panel in front of me. It was 3 feet by 2 feet and was held on by bolts in each of the corners, and I was fairly certain that I wouldn't find a socket wrench anywhere in the building. "Raz," I whispered like the machine in front of me would overhear, "I need you to unscrew these."
"Sure."
The slime woman strolled over and maneuvered some of her slime over the bolts. The oil-slick-colored goo slipped underneath the metal before it began to turn each of the 4 bolts. They stopped before they could fall onto the concrete, and I reached out to catch them. I let out a relieved breath when Acrasis pried off the thin metal sheet and set it on the ground. We were 1 step closer to shutting down the machine that had destroyed the Earth, and that meant that this world's Saul could rest in peace. I kept an eye on the product machine as I squatted down in front of the manual override computer. It had a tablet-sized screen with a black screen that had 3 white buttons on its flat screen. The first button was for maintenance, the second was for restarting the machine, and the last button was for product choices. The first and second buttons were pretty similar, but since I didn't want to restart the damn thing, I went with the maintenance choice. I clicked the first button and then held my breath as I waited for the machine's response. The Gilding PM continued to work without any indication that it had realized what I had done. So I tugged the sheet of paper out of my pocket and got to work. I found the shutdown easily enough. It had been hidden under a permanent change button, but it was the most obvious choice. I entered the long line of numbers and letters, pressed enter, and then waited. The warehouse went silent for a few seconds, and then the Gilding PM let out a loud screech that echoed off the concrete walls and floor. The high-pitched sound lasted for almost a full minute, and I covered my ears to protect myself from the sound. I glanced over at Fila to see that the saber-toothed woman had dropped down to cover her ears with her hands, and Acrasis had put her hands over Fila's for an extra layer of soundproofing. All of the drones that had been in the warehouse collapsed onto the concrete floor, and when I peeked around the machine, I saw that the ones outside had fallen as well. I had tears in my eyes when the screech finally ended and the Gilding PM went dark. The ringing in my ears stayed for a few more seconds before it disappeared, and then the warehouse was once again silent.
"Is it over?"
Fila asked. The saber-toothed woman opened her yellow-green eyes, and her pupils were round saucers like she expected to suddenly be attacked. When nothing came after her, she let out a huff and smoothed her hair with her hands. "I think so," I said. "I half expected it to blow up."
"I did as well,"
Emma said as she dusted off her puffy white sleeves.
"Though I am glad that it did not."
"Me too," I said. "Let's get out of here. I think we should be able to get one of the shipping containers now."
"Do you think the drones are actually dead?"
the Victorian woman said as she eyed the fallen robots. "No idea," I said. "Abby, can you tell me if the drones are out of order?"
"All flying machines, except for the flying winch that I control, are all disabled,"
the automated woman replied.
"Would you like me to reboot any of them?"
"No," I said. "I think the one we have should be more than enough."
"As you wish, Dave Meyer,"
Abby said.
"Where do you think the shipping containers will be?"
Emma asked as we all walked out toward the jamboree. "Abby said they were near here," I responded. "I think they're probably going to be around the back."
"Do we need to take the jeep?"
Fila asked as she eyed the bright orange jamboree with all of our supplies. "We might as well," I said. "Abby, can you give us directions to the shipping containers?"
"As you wish, Dave Meyer,"
the robotic woman said. A golden path formed on the lenses of my Namshubs, but I ignored it for the moment as I realized that we still hadn't refilled the gas tank. "We need to get some gas out of the tanker and fill the red gas cans we have," I said, as I pointed to the tanker that we'd parked next to. It took us a few minutes to figure out how to release a small enough stream that we could fill the gas cans, but soon they were all topped off and the jamboree was good to go. The jeep cranked up with no problem, and I smiled as the needle shot over to the full side. I buckled up while the girls climbed in, and then followed the golden path. The fallen drones made the drive into an obstacle course, but the off-road jeep was up to the task. I was able to maneuver over some of the fallen building materials that the robots had carried, but most of it I had to avoid so that I didn't risk damage to the undercarriage. The shipyard came into view pretty quickly since it was only a block away, and a grin spread across my face as I saw the stacks of the giant metal containers. I was sure that we'd be able to get it back before nightfall, and then I could get to work on the conversion. There'd been a few shows of hoarders and doomsday preppers that had done it, and the magpies had given us all the materials and instructions for how they'd manage to make theirs.
"Which one do we want?"
Emma asked as I slowed to a stop.
"I like the blue one,"
Acrasis said. She pointed to an ocean-colored container that was on top of two others. It was long enough that we could easily make several rooms, and the color wasn't so bright that it would immediately catch everyone's attention. But it would be a decent beacon for when we needed to get back to the base. "That one looks good to me," I said. "Abby, can you direct the drone winch to pick up that blue container?"
"As you wish, Dave Meyer,"
the automated voice said. The large drone winch flew over our heads and settled onto the metal box that Raz had picked out. Its cables extended until they had reached the eyelet hooks on each corner of the container, and I watched in fascination as they connected themselves without any help.
"This new home will be very sturdy,"
Fila said with a nod of approval. "It will be," I said. "And the magpies gave us everything we'd need to set it up as a home and base of operations."
"Is it just me, or does that drone seem to be having trouble?"
Emma asked in her refined accent. I took a closer look at the drone as it lifted into the air. The cables were tight,
but the shipping container barely moved. "Maybe it's full," I said. "It shouldn't be too heavy even if it's packed, though. And we can probably use whatever's inside."
"The drone winch is near maximum capacity,"
Abby informed me.
"However, it will have no problem transporting the container to the base."
The container tilted like the cargo was shifting as the drone struggled to lift it, and the pressure from whatever was inside forced the doors open. I stared in horror as a nest of cockroaches tumbled out into the shipyard, and all of them seemed pissed.